even in so-called humane forms, as a moral catastrophe. The four ends of meat consumption will dissipate as eating animals becomes less normal, and the evidence strengthens that it's not necessary for, or even beneficial to, human health. Activists will push for policy change that supports animal-free foods by utilizing the connections to politicians, food companies, and other institutions that they built through animal welfare reform campaigns. They might push for the taxation of animal-based foods, for negative labeling like we see on cigarette packages, for more bans on specific harmful animal farming practices, and for the reduction of animal farming subsidies and the creation of plant-based food subsidies. I would guess that this intermediate stage of a mixed food system, where a sizable portion of meat, dairy, and egg products in high-income countries will be made from plants and cell cultures, where animal-free foods are seen as normal options along with animal-based foods, the way plant-based milks in some urban coffee shops are seen today, will arrive in 10 to 30 years. The cultured products, especially acellular foods like dairy and eggs, will be produced at large scale by a few big food companies, though small-scale brewery-like production will be popular for some consumers. Some of the most popular products will be blended foods that mix animal-based components with animal-free components, similar to what we already see with soy used as an extender in beef. But this blending will be seen as a health and ethical benefit rather than as a cost savings. This period will also include a more vocal opposition to these new animal-free foods, mostly by people who see them as processed, unnatural, or untraditional. That opposition won't gain much traction outside states and regions with heavy economic focuses on animal farming, thanks to growing public support for animal-free foods generated by concerns about new avian and pig flu epidemics, environmental crises like droughts, and of course, a growing concern for farmed animals due to the expanding moral circle. Even in bastions of animal farming, the harm it does to local health, the environment, and the economy will lead to increasing ill will. From that point, I'd guess it'll take another 10 to 20 years, around 2038 to 2068, for animal-free foods to make up the majority of meat, dairy, and eggs in high-income countries. We will also see mixed food systems emerge at this point in urban areas in many lower-income countries. I don't think we'll see animal farming end in regions that are as poor as the poorest countries are today, where access to food technology is limited and farmed animals can be an efficient source of food and wealth savings. Animal farming will end in those regions once their incomes rise. A big uncertainty I have about this stage is whether we will see calls for the abolition of animal farming. Will the mainstream movement seek to outlaw animal farming entirely, or merely to reform the remaining industry and switch public consumption to animal-free foods? My tentative guess is that there will not be many countries where full abolition becomes the focus of the farmed animal movement at this stage, but it might happen, at least in a few small, progressive European countries like Austria and Switzerland. In some countries, we will also see an explicit push for the end of factory farming. This will be hard to implement, and we could see large public backlash if the animal agriculture industry refuses to end its industrial practices, similar to what happened when advocates tried and failed to reform British slavery in the early 1800s, leading to a successful push for the full emancipation of British slaves. Animal farms that continue to exist in high-income countries in the latter half of the 21st century will mostly make specialty products with greatly reduced animal suffering. By this point, reductions in animal farming will start to have noticeable effects on human health and local environments. We'll hear touching stories about factory farms being abandoned and torn down in rural areas. The waste covering the floors of those unsanitary sheds stops being kicked into the air. Hoses connected to waste runoff lakes stop spraying urine and feces into the wind, and local public health improves dramatically. People working with factory farms could also find new, better jobs in the post-animal food economy, though there will be tension here, as there is with any new industrial technology like computers replacing typewriters or automobiles replacing horse-drawn carriages. the animals themselves will by and large cease to be born into this cruel industry. There won't be a decision of what to do with all these cows, because it will just be a matter of fewer and fewer cows being born through artificial insemination. When there are freed cows, such as when an animal farmer has a change of heart and switches to plant or cell farming, there will be plenty of compassionate sanctuaries and rescuers. We will also have a surplus of land, including some grazing land that's ill-suited for crop production. In some cases, this land could be used for especially durable crops that work in the specific climate and soil conditions, or it could be reinvigorated to make it suitable for non-durable crops. But given the surplus of food once we end animal farming, recall how much plant material is required to produce meat, we could use this land for wind power, inedible plants like switchgrass that can be used as biofuels, cellular agriculture facilities, relocating humans who currently live on arable land, relocating humans who need space as Earth becomes increasingly crowded, or even just allowing nature to take over again. If I had to speculate, I would say that by 2100, all forms of animal farming will seem outdated and barbaric. The moral momentum of ending 99% of animal farming will lead our descendants to oppose even the final 1%, just as with other historical atrocities where, eventually, the institution was seen as inherently evil, despite initial opposition being to its most egregious implementations. The cows, chickens, or other animals from formerly farmed species who remain will live on sanctuaries, where humans care for them as an exercise in compassion and a reminder of our historical transition away from animal cruelty. Though even that might not happen because of how these animals are bred to suffer, even in the best sanctuary conditions. People eat animal products in spite of how they are produced, not because of it. As humanity gains unprecedented technological power, such as a deep understanding of cell and tissue biology, we will be able to create meat, dairy, eggs, leather, and other products without the metabolic waste of biological processes like movement and brain power. And if space colonization awaits humanity, why would we bring a system as unsustainable as animal farming with us? The system's fundamental inefficiency will end animal farming one day, regardless of our concern for animals, the environment, or human health. Despite my cautious optimism, I have significant uncertainty about all these long-term predictions. I'm also deeply uncertain about the continuing expansion of the moral circle from farmed animals to new populations like wild animals and digital beings, though it remains in the back of my mind as I focus on the moral progress of our generation. This is the eternal struggle of the advocate. We march forward with our day-to-day work, whether that's through science, activism, business, consumer choices, or any other role. There's a comfortable certainty in the achievements we see every day, but sometimes we look up to see distant goals like the end of factory farming and the end of animal farming altogether. These can seem so far away, sometimes hopelessly far away. Then every once in a while, some of us even look up to the stars and think about the future of human civilization, wondering what will happen if humanity takes control of the cosmos. The stakes can feel overwhelming, burdening advocates with a deep, inescapable feeling of Weltschmerz, a useful word for advocates to describe their burnout. It means mental depression or apathy caused by comparison of the actual state of the world with an ideal state. But that's not the only way to look at the situation. If you recognize the moral catastrophe of animal farming, you are a moral pioneer. As you walk with other advocates, you stand in the footsteps of people from every generation around the world who have fought for other Copernican leaps in the expansion of humanity's moral circle, such as the inclusion of women, people of color, and people who live in distant locations. These changemakers are our mentors. Stories of their success in our history books guide us and allow us to direct our sights confidently ahead, instead of fixing our gaze on the current struggles beneath our feet. What those who came before us have achieved for those of us here now should give us resolve that the world is never how it always will be. It is always ours to change. In turn, we leave our own footsteps for future moral pioneers to follow. We've talked about a lot of advocates in this book. There are investigators who have borne witness to the cruelty of animal farming and inspired many in our generation to commit ourselves to this issue. There are nonprofit and business leaders who wear suits and sit down with CEOs to bridge the gap between big food companies and the frontier of our moral circle. There are scientists and culinary professionals who are designing and constructing the food of the future. There are rescuers who take animals out of farms and tell their stories. There are leafleters and protesters waging months-long campaigns to effect policy change. And there are advocates who work full-time on other important issues like human health, human rights, and climate protection, building bridges between those movements and the movement to end animal farming. This is your community. This is the generation that will revolutionize not just the way we eat, but the way we care for the many billions of sentient beings who, until now, have suffered without relief outside of humanity's moral circle. When this tragedy weighs on you, these are all people you can turn to. The advocates profiled in this book, and those working at organizations and companies dedicated to disrupting animal agriculture, are accessible via email and phone. It would make their day to hear your story and help you get involved. If you want to help with corporate campaigns for animal-free food options and better living conditions for farmed animals, consider signing up for the Hen Heroes program of Mercy for Animals, or the Fast Action Network of the Humane League, or just follow these organizations on social media. If you're an entrepreneur or biologist, discuss startup opportunities with the Good Food Institute. The organization maintains a list of business ideas that could receive funding and mentoring from its network. If you're a writer or social scientist, contact me at the Sentience Institute to discuss research projects on topics like the best terminology and branding for cell-cultured meat. Maintain a mindset of effective altruism and read the results of that research to find new, exciting ways of having a bigger impact than you ever thought possible. Above all, make connections with other advocates. Social movements live or die based on the quality of relationships among advocates. It's easy to make friends in a dedicated community that's built on compassion, like the farmed animal movement. It's a big ecosystem, and it might take meeting a few different people to find your niche. But in a burgeoning social movement like this one, there's room for everyone. We hope you have enjoyed this presentation of The End of Animal Farming, how scientists, entrepreneurs, and activists are building an animal-free food system by J.C. Rees, from Beacon Press Audio, read for you by Tom Rivera. Copyright 2018 by J.C. Rees. This unabridged audiobook was published by Beacon Press Audio in the year 2018, which holds the copyright thereto. The book, The End of Animal Farming by J.C. Rees, is available in print and ebook forms wherever print and ebooks are sold. If you enjoyed this audiobook, we also recommend Mousy Cats and Sheepish Coyotes, The Science of Animal Personalities by John A. Shivick, available now from Beacon Press Audio. For other books about animals and the environment, visit our website at www.beacon.org.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.